You're listening to 2A Radio with Bill Carnes.
Some people do say that I have a touch too much, maybe come on a little bit too strong. But anyhow, you are tuned in to the Second Amendment Radio Show. We like to shorten that down to 2A Radio. As far as I can tell, it is the only Monday through Friday daily nationally syndicated radio show dedicated to the Second Amendment. Now, of course, we talk about all kinds of stuff, be it Second Amendment rights, First Amendment rights, Fifth Amendment rights, states' Tenth Amendment rights, and how the government is getting bigger, badder, bolder, and just trying to hose us out of everything. You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. RepublicBroadcasting.org is the website. All kinds of great stuff there. Archives are available on the RBN site. It's $1.33 a month. However, RBN is also standing up a second network, the Elected Radio Network, Elected Representatives Network, ERN. If anybody is interested in helping to get that off, that's all self-funded. You can donate a little bit more than the $1.33 a month, $5, $10, $20, whatever it may be. You can go to republicbroadcasting.org and check that out. We also, if you'd like to spread the message, we have generic business cards for RBN. For 100 cards, they're $10. They're full color. They're on a nice glossy finish. They're very nice. I come from a printing background, and I can tell you these are nice cards. They're not junk. They're not some laser printer card that comes off. They're very nice things. If you order those, you can also get an RBN bumper sticker and a free copy of Aaron Russo's America from Freedom to Fascism, which, if you have not seen, is an eye-opener. It is fantastic. So, to order all those things, you can call the regular business office, which is 800-724-2719, or you can mail in to Republic Broadcasting at 2251 Double Creek Boulevard, Suite 302. That's Round Rock, Texas, 78664. And if at any time you'd like to call into the show, the call-in number is 800-313-9443. That's how to get a hold of me right here live. So, with all of that being said, we do have a couple of show sponsors I would like to get to. First of all, you can go to BillCarnes.com. That is all about me. I am the host of the show. I was on the first series of History Channel's Top Shot, which is a shooting-based reality competition show of sorts. I was on season one with 15 other fantastic people. You can, also on there, I have my NFA tab. It says NFA Guns with a question mark. You can click on that. I put together Class 3 NFA Trusts. And that is if you'd like to own any sort of NFA items, the National Firearms Act, be it machine guns, submachine guns, suppressors, explosive devices, destructive devices, I think they're called, and then the AOW, any other weapons. You can own those personally, or you can form a corporation, or the most leeway and the quickest way of getting about it, and the least expensive, is by far, by going through with the NFA Trust. I set those up individually for everybody. Additionally, one of our sponsors is RoninTactical.com. Now, Ronin Tactical features high-end defensive tactics types firearms instructors. And what they do is they're also certified in many of the states to teach concealed weapons permits. So what happens is you get together a group, you get a hold of RoninTactical.com, R-O-N-I-N, they send out one of their certified instructors, and you sit down and you go through the concealed weapons permits, which will get you about 30-plus states between the concealed weapons permits that you'll get wherever you live. It doesn't matter. So they will send folks out to get you set up with that. So go to RoninTactical.com. You can also go to my website, BillCarnes.com, and the show website, 2aradio.com. I have all of my archives there and information about me on both sites. So there you go. Stay tuned, folks. You're tuned in live right here with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and Two-Way Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
All right. Well, we're going to start today with some good news coming out of the great state of Washington, specifically the Second Amendment Foundation based in Bellevue, Washington. Well, acting on behalf of a Georgia resident and honorably discharged Vietnam veteran, the Second Amendment Foundation, just a couple of days ago, filed a lawsuit against Attorney General Eric Holder and the FBI over enforcement of a federal statute that can deny gun rights to someone with a simple misdemeanor conviction on their record. The lawsuit was filed in the United States District Court for the District of Columbia, right in our nation's capital. The most clear and present danger to the freedom of the United States of America is centered right there in the District of Columbia with the, well, jackasses of the federal government. Second Amendment Foundation and co-plaintiff Jefferson Wayne Schrader of Cleveland, Georgia, are represented by attorney Alan Gura, who, if you'll remember, successfully argued both the Heller and McDonald cases before the U.S. Supreme Court. Now, in July of 1968, Schrader, who was 21 years old at the time, was found guilty of misdemeanor assault and battery relating to a fight involving a man who had previously assaulted him in Annapolis, Maryland. The altercation was observed by a police officer who arrested Schrader, who was at the time an enlisted man in the Navy and stationed in Annapolis. The man he fought was in a street gang that had attacked him for entering their territory, according to the complaint. Schrader was ordered to pay $100 in a fine and $9 in court costs. He subsequently served a tour of duty in Vietnam and was eventually honorably discharged from the U.S. Navy. However, in 2008 and again in 2009, Mr. Schrader was denied the opportunity to receive a shotgun as a gift or to purchase a handgun for personal protection. He was advised by the FBI to dispose of or surrender any firearms he might have or face criminal prosecution. Schrader's dilemma, according to Second Amendment Foundation Executive VP Alan Gottlieb, is that until recently, Maryland law did not set forth a maximum sentence for the crime of misdemeanor assault. Because of that, he's now being treated like a felon, and his gun rights have been denied. Now, no fair-minded person can tolerate gun control laws being applied in this way, according to Gura. He adds by saying, Mr. Schrader's case is a great example of why gun owners cannot trust government bureaucrats to enforce gun law. Well, it'll be very interesting to see where this one goes. Second Amendment Foundation is probably the single finest organization in the entire country that will get behind people and enact and join into lawsuits fighting the government so that we can have our gun rights restored and they're no longer taken away. Now realize we have gun rights, but they've been infringed upon and we've got to go to court. Costs a lot of money and a lot of time to battle to get a right which has been illegally taken away to get them back, to get them restored. What part of shall not infringed don't you understand? What don't you get about it? Now, again, another case out of the state of Washington involving the federal government. Pierce County, Washington prosecutor Mark Lindquist got it right a couple of days ago when he announced that no charges would be filed in the shooting death of 44-year-old Rhett Whitchurch of White Center, Washington, who lost his life during an attempted drug ripoff on the Key Peninsula on October 7th. Whitchurch was the only person killed in a wild shootout between people in the Lake Bay house where an alleged marijuana grow operation had been uncovered. The several people who were apparently trying to rob the homeowner identified, who was identified as James Scott, 28 years old. The Tacoma News Tribune has been doing a smashing job of reporting this case, detailing how it involved alleged sales of OxyContin. Of course, this case needs to be sorted out, but one thing was made clear by Lindquist in his decision not to press charges in Whitchurch's demise. He was killed in self-defense. The prosecutor's explanation is as simple and straightforward as it gets. You break into somebody's house with a gun, he said, as a matter of fact, you take the chance you're going to get shot. This is hardly a case of good guys versus bad guys, but there may be really no good guys involved, and Lindquist is apparently still undecided about filing separate charges against Scott, his younger brother, Tyler, and their housemate, Jeffrey Hacker, 29 years old, for alleged OxyContin sales and having the 25 marijuana plants growing on the property. Nobody is going to cry crocodile tears for Whitchurch or his alleged cohorts, Julia Mae Jones, 22, and Justin Dale, 27. Jones was apparently the getaway driver, and Hill went through the door with Whitchurch and was wounded in the leg in the gunfight. Hill is a real model citizen, according to the News Tribune, having been convicted of forgery, reckless driving, driving under the influence, and eluding law enforcement. As a convicted felon, he can't legally possess firearms. Home invasion robbery has happened before in the Puget Sound area, and the fact that this incident ended in a swarm of bullets is no surprise, considering the alleged business dealings of the participants. Meanwhile, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, that's right, BATFE, Bureaucrats Against True Freedom and Enterprises, is apparently responsible, along with the Obama administration and Hillary Clinton's Department of State, for blocking the return of thousands of vintage M1 Garand rifles from South Korea to the United States. Of course, we've been covering this as long as about 8 weeks ago. Of course, the story has been picked up by many news sources recently. A document cited by David Cordera expresses concerns that another firearm that the Koreans wanted to send back is the M1 carbine. An ATF document cited by Cordero reveals that the ATF is concerned that these carbines could be, quote, easily converted, end quote, to fire full auto. That is a total lie. That is the same lie that the ATF perpetrated by saying that airsoft AR-15s could be, quote, easily converted, end quote, to fire live ammunition when they were imported from another country without the red tips. And the recipients would take those guns without the red tips and spray paint the bright red tips on there. They're able to buy the guns more cheaply without the red tips on it. They added the red tips. ATF took these guns, this is sometime earlier this year, and said it's a violation and these guns could be easily converted to fire real ammunition. Total lies. Now, the same document that ATF has, it says that these M1 carbines could be easily converted to fire full auto, which is a lie. The same document subsequently admits that an experienced machinist could manufacture all of the needed parts within 8 hours. Now, that doesn't sound too easy. In fact, it seems rather time-consuming, and you'd have to be an experienced machinist. The ATF also acknowledges that, quote, it is unlikely that a significant number of the M1 Garands will be used in crimes. So why ban a piece of American military history, guys? General George Smith Patton once called the M1 Garand the finest battle implementation ever devised. Collectors love them, and millions are in circulation amongst competitive shooters and collectors. The M1 carbine went down into battle on D-Day with the 82nd and 101st Airborne, and it saw plenty of action in the Pacific with the Army and the Marines. Anybody who wants to compare these heroes with street criminals and terrorists? Is that what the ATF is doing? The ATF, according to the document Cordero uncovered, believes the importation of these firearms, and particularly the M1 carbine, poses a threat to public safety in the U.S. Because the M1 carbine and the larger M1 Garand went to war overseas, public safety in the U.S. was assured, especially between 1941 and 1945. So, what about the civilian marksmanship program, where the government itself sells off these exact guns and at a discount to members of the civilian marksmanship program? The very same government that provides these guns to the general public is now saying these guns that were built in the U.S. and shipped to South Korea, and now Korea would like to ship them back to the U.S., the same government that offers them to the general public is saying, no, we don't want them. Anybody out there who claims that Obama and his regime are not anti-gun are fooling themselves and trying to fool everyone else that they are speaking to. It's a lie. Anybody who respected the Constitution or the limited powers and authorities of the federal government would allow these guns in. Don't respect them, don't want them. You should have to swear to uphold, defend, and obey the Constitution of the United States. Stay tuned, folks. More to come after the break. RoninTactical.com has certified concealed carry training specialists that travel to you and your group of self-protection advocates. Organize a group of friends, family, or co-workers who take their responsibility of self-protection seriously, and RoninTactical.com will send out a certified training specialist who will provide a course of instruction that will get you and your group certified to carry concealed in over 30 states while providing you, the organizer, a commission for organizing the event. Do you travel for work, family, or vacation and want to remain armed and safe when traveling? Contact RoninTactical.com for details on staying home and having one of our certified professionals travel to you to provide the training and credentials for you and your group to safely and legally carry concealed in over 30 states. Call 888-416-4809 or go online to RoninTactical.com.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
And welcome back from the break, everyone. I have a guest in studio today. A guest, he's been a good friend of mine for, what, probably 5 or 6 years now? Somewhere around there, I'm guessing.
At least six.
Justin Campbell. Justin is in here representing RoninTactical.com. And Ronin Tactical is a new company that has been put together by several, actually organized by several people. One really is kind of the head. And we're talking about some pretty high-end and very well-certified firearms instructors who are bringing concealed weapons training and concealed weapon permits from around the country to you, wherever you happen to live. Am I right?
That's absolutely correct.
Yeah, so tell us just a little bit about... I know that the whole thing has to do with the movement of people being able to get guns and being able to pack and travel and, have what's called reciprocity or even recognition of a concealed weapons permit from one state to the next. Tell us a little bit about how Ronin Tactical works out, Justin.
All right. The key thing about Ronin Tactical is we bring the class to you. So you don't have to worry about traveling somewhere to take your class. The certified instructors will come to you and deliver the class at your location. If there needs to be some shooting for the certain states' requirements, we just need to make sure we have a range set up.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Now, and I understand that, undoubtedly, the two very best states to get concealed weapons permits from, whether you live there or not, would be Utah and Florida, because so many other states recognize Utah and Florida, with like 30, 32 states, something like that?
It's about 32 right now.
Yeah. So if you have a Utah concealed weapons permit, you might be able to carry in the state that you're in. But if you don't, if you leave and travel around, say you travel for business, family, pleasure, whatever it might be. If you travel, say you live in Michigan and you want to travel down to Arizona, Nevada, Utah area, Colorado, maybe around there, it's very likely that those states will recognize either Utah or Florida or both. So you can pack having an out-of-state permit, even if you don't live in Utah or Florida.
That's correct.
Good. Well, that rocks. That's, you know, and I have a Utah permit. It wasn't so much for that. When I got my Utah permit, that was actually the year I was contracting for Department of Defense in Utah, and I got my Utah permit then, and it just worked out that after that, it really started to flourish, and if you've got a Utah permit, you can carry in like 30-plus states.
It's an outstanding permit. And the nice thing about Utah and Florida, we don't have to have a shooting range available. It's a safe gun handling requirement, and so we'll go over the safe gun handling in the classroom. We don't need to actually go out and fire rounds.
Really? Okay, so you don't actually have to have a range to call Ronin Tactical and bring you guys out.
Right, you can just call us out at a location where we can host a class for a classroom.
Okay, so you need some sort of a classroom, you got to have a host, and then they put together what people will bring in, friends, family, coworkers, whatever it is, and have X number of people that want to take this class, something that would probably make it, I'd imagine, good enough financially. Good enough for everybody involved so you guys can come out and actually cover your costs and do your class and such as that.
Absolutely. We even pay a commission for people that set up classes for us.
Really?
Yes. So if you wanted to host a class and you put together 15 or 20 people, we'll pay you a commission.
Me as the organizer?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yes, sir.
All right. Cool. Now, I would imagine if you're paying commission, then, like, say I'm the one who's organizing, and I get 25, 30 people that I know together. And let's say I live in Kansas. We want to get a Utah and Florida CCWs, right? So you guys will come out and give that class to 25, 30 people I set up, whatever, 15, 20, whatever it is. And I get a percentage for everybody that comes in, whatever the rate is. Do you have a set rate, or is it really based on your costs of actually going out there and running these courses?
It's going to be based off of travel. If we're going to have to travel, say, to Kansas.
Okay.
For airfare and hotel as well.
Okay, so if it's a more expensive place to travel to and stay, the price goes up a little. If it's a place a little bit less, then they say. So you guys are really out there marketing based on what your actual costs of doing business is.
Yes, that's
good. Well, you can't get any better than that.
No. And if you live in a state and we don't have a certification to give you a CCW in that state, we'll research and become licensed if possible. So that way we can actually offer that state's CCW as well.
Okay, so let's go back to Kansas again. So you might look to see if you could be a Kansas CCW instructor as well as bringing Utah and Florida. So somebody could carry in Kansas plus another 30-plus states. And they don't have to travel to Utah or Florida or anywhere else, and you guys can come in and do all of that right then and there.
Absolutely.
Well, now that rocks.
Absolutely.
All right. So have you done some courses already?
Yes, we've had courses in Seattle, California, Arizona.
Good. All right, so you're already getting it done.
Yes.
Now, what if I want to shoot? Can we go out and do some shooting
Absolutely.
If we get a range together?
Absolutely.
Good. All right, so is it just CCW-related stuff? I mean, are we going to be carrying from concealment or Is it up to the class, like whoever organizes it, what kind of shooting we can do, or how does that work?
We can adapt it to what the user needs, but we'll do some concealment work, some basic tactical survival type shooting, what you might encounter in a CCW world.
Okay, so out on the street, actually packing concealed, and we can roll it down. That's RoninTactical.com. Is that correct? Ronin, R-O-N-I-N, Tactical.com.
That's correct.
Great. All right, man. I appreciate it. And you actually happen to be a certified handgun combat master, too, don't you?
Number 43.
Number 43, Chuck Taylor. All right, so we don't have to worry about slouches coming out there and just a bunch of wannabe CCW geeks. We actually have some real-life pros.
Real-life pros, tactical experience.
Excellent. Justin, I appreciate it. You're also a veteran, aren't you?
I am.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Guys, stay tuned. There's plenty more to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, and you're tuned in live right here to 2A Radio.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio are back.
You know, there's an erroneous belief that because someone carries a gun for a living, that they are somehow ultimately the best gun handler in the world. Like, most people who know very little to nothing about guns believe that cops have this unbelievable amount of training, and they could literally shoot the gun out of a bad guy's hand without even using the sight. Just quick drop, bing, it's done. Nothing could be further from the truth. If you actually look at the hit percentages when cops are involved in gunfights, the national statistical average of bullets fired from a cop's gun that actually draw blood on the bad guy that they're trying to shoot is 17%. That is 17 out of every 100 rounds fired actually draw blood, pierce the skin. Now, we'll turn that around and grab the other statistic. That means 83 out of 100 rounds are screaming downrange with "to whom it may concern" written on them, and God knows where they're going to end up. 83 out of 100 rounds. It seems like it's statistically much safer to be directly downrange of a cop's gun when he's trying to shoot you than off to one side or another where he'll probably hit you. He, she, whomever. The actual hit percentage for a vital area, such as they shoot for center of mass, the chest cavity or the head if being aimed for in the cranio-ocular cavity, to actually hit inside of either of those is less than 5%. So that means that one round out of every 20 actually hit the intended area. Or 19 out of 20 do not. 95 out of 100 rounds do not hit their intended target. 83 out of 100 rounds scream downrange somewhere else. There was a huge shootout at the courthouse earlier this year in downtown Las Vegas. 83 rounds fired, 4 rounds hit. How about that? Well, the irresponsible gun owner of the day is the police chief, Eric Swenson, of Sebeka, Minnesota. Again, most people hold the mistaken belief that police are the ultimate gun guys. It's an archetype born in childhood by prepubescent boys playing cops and robbers. The men and women who eventually don the uniform soon learn the real discrepancy between heroic fantasy and prosaic reality. There's a reason cops call their work the job. Like most jobs, 90% of policing is mind-numbing routine. It's easy for a cop to get very blasé about the whole business. Easy to get sloppy and careless about ever-present firearms as well. So, how about this? Sebeka Police Chief Eric Swanson, who lives in Otter Tail County near Sebeka, Minnesota, called his buddies on Friday to report that several items of police equipment had been stolen from his home, according to the Otter Tail Sheriff's Department. Now, the rest of this information, as you hear it, keep in mind that the local media are obliged to maintain good relations with the local local cops. For example, one wonders if the story would have even seen the light of day if Chief Swenson didn't live in someone else's patch. In any case, it's pretty easy to see why Swenson had to call 911 eventually. Among the items were stun grenades, gas grenades, 25 gas shotgun rounds, loaded magazines for both a Glock 9mm handgun and an AR-15 rifle, a police radio, and a pair of night vision goggles. Swenson believed the items were taken sometime within the last 2 weeks. Are we sure that this isn't just missing something important, like, say, an AR-15 or a Glock? Although it's easy to understand why Swenson had his gear at home, local cops often have to respond to emergency calls straight from the house, right? Why in the world wasn't it kept under lock and key? Then again, maybe it was. The identity of the eventual culprit gives us a clue of the quality of Chief Swenson's security arrangements. On Monday, Swenson called the sheriff's office back to report that he had found the items. Unbeknownst to him, one of his children had taken the items and moved them to a homemade fort in the backyard. All of the items were found there. So either the items weren't safely secured, or we have another case where a child defeated his parents' firearm storage solution, which was obviously inadequate if it existed. Does it even matter? The bottom line is the same. Chief Swenson failed to maintain proper vigilance over his gear with his children. Folks, if you have kids in your house, you need to A, train them about guns. You must educate them about how to handle themselves around these items, as in, don't touch them. But if you just put them away and say, nope, don't touch, you can't see, nothing, not for you, not for Junior, that's going to pique their curiosity. They will get a hold of them, and accidents quite commonly do happen. Don't do that. Take some responsibility. Then after you show them these things, keep them in a safe place which is inaccessible to them. Imagine if this guy, this Chief Swenson, actually had his guns out and his son got a hold of the guns and started playing cops and robbers with daddy's real stuff because he's cooler because it's real. And somebody got shot. That would be entirely on the parent's shoulders, in this case, a chief of police. If you have guns, educate your kids so the curiosity is gone and that they understand not to get into these things, and then secure them from the kids. Okay? That has been statistically shown to be the best way of doing things. Now, there's an interesting statistic when it comes to crime stats that Obama will not be able to actually draw to. And it's interesting. Listen to this. Obama undoubtedly did not intend, but he does deserve some credit for the recent reports that all violent crime rates dropped in 2009 and are headed that way in 2010. Murder rates down by 7.4% nationally. Robbery rates down 9% nationally. His election caused gun sales to skyrocket, which then causes crime rates to drop. Imagine that. The best gun and ammunition salesman in the history of the United States, Barack Hussein Obama, with his sales assistants in the name of Harry Reid, Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, some of these other anti-gun zealots in D.C. Gun sales started notably rising in October of 2008, and sales really took off immediately after Obama won the presidential race. 450,000 more people bought guns in November 2008 than had bought them in November 2007. Nearly 500,000 additional people. That is over a 40% rise in sales. By comparison, the change from November 2006 to November 2007 was only about 35,000, as opposed to the 450,000 we just discussed. Over the last decade, the average year-to-year increase in monthly sales was only 21,000. The higher sales continued well beyond November of 2008. About 3.15 million more people bought guns in the 14 months after Obama was elected than in the preceding 14 months. The National Instant Criminal Background Check System, the NICS, which does the Brady checks, doesn't tell us how many guns each person bought, just the number of people who bought them. Now, most likely, though, gun sales rose by more than the number of people who purchased them, because you can buy multiple guns at one time in most states, but not all. At the time gun sales were soaring, there was an unusually large drop in murder rates. 7.4% drop in the murder rate was the largest drop in murder rate since 1999. For those who don't remember 1999, when Bill Clinton was president and Columbine occurred, it was another time when gun sales soared, with Clinton's domestic policy advisors such as Elena Kagan, now Supreme Court Justice, pushing hard for more gun control. Americans worried that more gun bans were coming, and in response, gun sales soared. Do you really think Obama's going to be able to take credit? If he does, he's not going to be able to cite anything dealing with because people bought guns, because that would be against the gun grabbers' ideology. They hate it when that happens. Now, here's a politician's stand on the Second Amendment, and his stance determines if you're a subject or a citizen. Listen to this. A politician stands on the Second Amendment determines whether or not you're a subject or a citizen. This comes out of Mansfield, New Jersey. It's a Texas legislator, Dr. Suzanne Griotta Hupp. That's a hyphen. I don't know why, but hyphen names just bother me. But Suzanne Griotta Hupp said, quote, how a politician stands on the Second Amendment tells you how he or she views you as an individual, as a trustworthy and productive citizen, or as part of an unruly crowd that needs to be lorded over, controlled, supervised, and taken care of. Well, hear ye, that is in fact true. Every election cycle, we see candidates with marginal commitments to gun owners doing a masquerade intended to deceive voters. A standard buzz phrase these candidates use is hunter access, different words designed to bait unsuspected gun owners into thinking the candidate is truly committed to the right to bear arms. Don't take the bait for the particular trap, and don't fall for the on-paper-only hunting-sounding groups that emerge only shortly before each election to offer political cover for candidates who do not fully support the right to bear arms. Rather, trust the entities that have been in the trenches for decades fighting for your rights. Now, a lot of these organizations evaluate candidates for you. Many of them give you ratings. Don't get sucked into the photo op candidates who borrow a shotgun for a campaign photo. There's a lot of folks that do that. Now, one of the things that you can absolutely rely on is the NRA giving a ranking on any particular political candidate. What you cannot rely on is whether or not that is a true rating. Case in point, probably the single most important race this entire election cycle in this entire nation is right here in my home state of Nevada, where Senate Majority Leader Harry the Scuzzball Reid is running for yet another term in the Senate, and in the polls is beginning to trail to highly conservative Tea Party candidate Sharon Angle. Now, Harry Reid stands to lose a lot. Susan Angle stands to gain just a little. The state of Nevada would go from having the Senate Majority Leader, most powerful person in the Senate, to having a freshman first-term senator who, if the Republicans don't control the Senate after this election, would also be in the minority party. Is Nevada really willing to give up all of this power? Well, of course we are, because it does nothing for us. The highest foreclosure rate in the country, the highest unemployment in the country, and our senator is Senate Majority Leader. Well, the National Rifle Association sees Harry Reid as someone who's not incredibly anti-gun, but is at least subversively anti-gun. But even so, they didn't endorse him, because they know that Sharon Angle is highly pro-gun. They gave Sharon Angle an A rating, but didn't endorse her. They say they didn't endorse Harry Reid because he voted for confirmation of Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan to the Supreme Court, two rabidly anti-gun women who are now on the Supreme Court of the United States. They also said that doing things such as that would drop your grading by the NRA. Sharon Engel has an A. That's wonderful. It's like in school. Harry Reid, last time he was ranked, had a B. They say they didn't endorse him because of Sotomayor and Kagan, yet he still has a B rating. Really. So for that reason, they didn't endorse him. But they're not going to endorse Sharon Engel either. However, they did donate $4,950 to Harry Reid's re-election campaign. You're not allowed to donate more than $5,000. So they gave essentially the limit, but didn't endorse him, but didn't endorse Sharon Engel either. Why? Because if Harry Reid retains his seat, the NRA doesn't want to lose what little influence they may have by whispering in Harry Reid's ear. An organization that refuses to do that sort of game playing is the Gun Owners of America. Go on their site, look at who they endorse. We'll be right back right after this break. If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back up, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong if this is not where you belong.
All right, everybody. It is Friday. I want to thank everybody for having been tuned in throughout the week. It's been a week like every other. There's a lot of fighting to try to retain our rights, whether it's our First Amendment rights, whether it's our Second Amendment rights, whether it's the states fighting with the federal government over their 10th Amendment rights. It's a constant battle. We never seem to get away from it. And here's the thing that really seems to hold true. We have people in legislative authority, whether it's from your local town, all the way up to and including the entire Congress, both houses, the House and the Senate. And we have people in those positions of authority when it comes to legislative creation that aren't really too concerned about your rights. Unfortunately, they are not referring to the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution, the federal Constitution. And at the state level and below, they're not referring to the Constitution of that state. And they're just randomly passing all this legislation, a lot of which inhibits your rights and mine. Then we end up with an executive branch, be that from the president down, into the law enforcement and police ranks, to where they now begin to enforce this legislation, which is otherwise unconstitutional. Until someone gets arrested and fights on its constitutional authority, by spending a lot of money with somebody other than a court-appointed judge, court-appointed attorney, then we end up having problems where we have to try to find things to be unconstitutional. Then, that doesn't necessarily mean that the legislative branch will repeal anything, rewrite anything, or the executive branch will ever enforce things differently. We need to fight at the legislative battle. We need to fight at that level first. That's our primary battleground, the legislative battleground. We need to essentially replace anybody and everybody who has a voting record that would subvert your rights, which quite honestly, folks, is probably 90%+ of those people from a town, city, county, state, and federal level, which are elected to do such things. You need to get in touch with the people who are elected officials, who are also elected into the executive branch, such as city attorneys, district attorneys, attorney generals of your states, and let them know that you'll be fighting and fighting hard to make sure that unconstitutional laws that are already on the books come off of the books, and we no longer have to deal with them. It's up to them not to enforce unconstitutional laws. Thanks for spending your week here.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2WayRadio.com.